It is 444 on Downtown. Time to talk wine. We do it each week at this time. Our message in the bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan with us in the studio. Good afternoon, sir.
Hello. How are you, gentlemen?
Fabulous. How are you today?
I'm great. Well, you guys just finished up tuna carpaccio from Bob. That's got to be good.
It was awfully good. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting. I can't wait to see like when my kids are going to like certain things. And that is definitely something that took me a while to get my head around. But when I did, it was like, it was all over. And then I just found myself wanting more. Like, so this is an appetizer, huh? That's great. Just fill my plate.
My guy eats nothing. So I'd be happy to see him eating milk, yogurt, and cereal.
Yeah.
Maybe a carrot,
some blueberries.
Does he do
the cereal with the milk?
No.
Right, exactly. No. That was me actually all through.
We had to actually cut him off from milk because he'd go through 2 gallons and just have that.
Yeah. That would lead to bad things later, I think, office. The junior office.
He was developing udders, too.
That was so awkward. Yeah, no, I saw a gentleman the other day. I'm sure he meant to, though, transitioning and such. No, actually, it was funny. A conversation I had today with a customer led to what I'm eating today, but that was part of it is, you know, we were talking about what your kids will eat and won't eat. So right now, going at home, and this is something I never make, but I have chili going at home because it's fall all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Sorry to break it to you all, but my gosh. The customer came in to get some stuff to make chili, and I was like, my gosh, I love chili, and I never make it. And I was worried about whether or not my kids will eat it because they don't eat sauce. And she asked, well, what is sauce? I said, any liquid. Dressing is sauce. Ketchup is sauce. Mustard is sauce. Aioli is sauce. And so I'm wondering if chili itself, like, will be sauce around, this hamburger and sausage and all this glorious stuff that I put in there. And I'm really kind of curious because they'll eat a hamburger. They'll eat, various things.
Will they eat things mixed together, like in chili?
Well, that's going to be the other curious part. I mean, because my daughter will now do, like, cheese dogs and cheeseburgers, which is a blending of flavors, which is sort of where we're getting to. But my manager, when I was first starting in the wine business, was a great guy, Teddy Koutsabelis, second-generation Greek guy. And all he would say, it's not the sandwich, it's what's binding it together, And if you don't have something that's excellent to tie it all together and to give you a little bit of moisture and flavor, it's not a sandwich.
Mm.
And I look at my kids and I try to imagine, like, was I like that? I didn't do the cereal and milk thing as a kid. It took me, I don't even really do cereal, so it never really struck me as like something exciting. I like bacon, egg, and cheese, which is how I roll. But I didn't discover that until later in life either, right? But I still remember having, like, hamburgers with ketchup and hot dogs with mustard. And sometimes I tried the hamburgers with mustard thing. And it was definitely, like, something from another culture that, like, some kid from, like, Tennessee or someone's like, oh, you should try this. We do this at home. I'm like, oh, okay, well, that's interesting, but maybe not. So we'll see. We'll see what my kids think.
Now, what about
chili.
The perennial favorite mac and cheese? Does that count as sauce?
No.
Okay.
Because they're down with cheese. I think they get the whole cheese melty thing. And of course, I do have some really good 3-year-old Quebec cheddar at home to, grate over.
You're not mixing up the powder.
No. Well, no. Good. They like the what is it, the Annie's, the stuff in the purple. Yeah. That's big. And they do ask for that occasionally. And Christine, in moments of panic, we'll just make that, and that's quick and easy. But they're really awful. I've tasted it. I'm sorry for anybody who likes like Annie's and stuff like that. But once you've had good macaroni and cheese, just having that stuff is just not. It's just not there. And I couldn't tell you the last time I had like Kraft macaroni and cheese. But I know there's a place for that, and that place is college at 2 a.m. yes. after a 6-foot bong.
That place is all right. It's I had ramen last night.
Yeah. Oh man, ramen. I was made out of ramen, and I went to a boarding school, and I actually had a Thai roommate, so I actually had to like get used to like real noodle packages from the old country, as it were, which was a nice segue to what we're doing today. But man, and I got some chili stuff in my eye one time from Thailand. Thai chili paste is no joke. Just FYI.
Wow.
So now we're. I wish I had queued up. I had Carrie queue up the Godfather theme music or whatever, right? We're going to Sicily. So last week we're finishing up Italy, And the reason that I really shouldn't even say that is because, of course, the Sicilians, if you told them they were Italian, would probably knife you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's fair. And why? Because Sicily's really cool. Sicily is like its own continent in the middle of the Mediterranean. It's near Italy, and it's got a lot of the same sort of traditions, but it's really very different, and it's very geologically, geographically, climatologically, I made that up, diverse. It's extraordinarily diverse. How diverse? Well, first of all, bear in mind that it, just on the surface, if you go there and visit, it bears the scars and the remnants of countless civilizations. You've got temples from Greeks. You've got fortresses from the Moors when the Moorish empires were moving up into the Mediterranean and taking over. You've got Roman everything, right? You know, mosaics and temples and all this. And they're all overlaid, and Etruscans and all these sorts of civilizations have conquered Sicily in various parts and held various parts of Sicily. It's that big. It's very big. And you've also got the fact that the southern tip of it, of Sicily, rather, is farther south than Tunis, right? So that's the northern tips of Africa. This is farther south, closer to the equator. It's very warm, very dry in the southern part of Sicily. Whereas in the north of Sicily, it's actually quite cool. You have several mountains, including, of course, the famous Mount Etna that we'll talk about a little bit later, that actually have snow cover for much, if not all, of the year. So it's really very, very diverse. It's very, very interesting. And subsequently, obviously, there's a lot of different things being grown there, which is why I wanted to kind of give a whole day or whole segment, whole day, whole 10 minutes, to Sicily itself. So, like I said, conditions are very hot in the south. Winds from the African continent kind of come up. They dry everything out. It's a very dry heat. And so what's really interesting is that that means there's very little spraying needed. It's very good growing conditions, honestly. So it's a place that's kind of getting rife with all these guys, much like the south of France, who are kind of coming in and doing organic and biodynamic agriculture and saying, well, we don't need to spray here. There's no need for any of that. There is need for irrigation in quite a lot of these places, but that's not against organic tenets. It's really, you know, it's a very pure for no chemical spraying, and that's really, really nice. Now in the north, a little bit different, but some really, really cool things happening, especially like I said, on the slopes of Mount Etna. So you're getting volcanic soils, especially that are, as we have spoken about in prior things when we talked about Pompeii blowing its top and things like that. Volcanic soils are very rich. They're very, very good for agriculture. And as you get up a little bit, you still get that strain that the grapevines need, and you're getting some really, really interesting things on the slopes of Mount Etna. And then, of course, in the west is where we've all heard of the famous Marsala wine, right? So Marsala is more than, I mean, I suppose if you're my age, right, so I'm almost 40, you've never really known Marsala to be anything interesting. You've just known it as this really cheap wine on the bottom shelf of your local supermarket to make chicken Marsala. Now, I'm not one to disparage chicken Marsala. I love me some chicken Marsala. I mean, you know, mushrooms and chicken and just this rich decadent sauce that you put on pasta is wonderful. But Marsala is actually capable of being much, much more. And interestingly enough, the wine that we're drinking today is a still white expression of the grape that they use in Marsala. So it's sort of a further extension of that really, really interesting wine. What happened in Sicily for a long, long time is that there was a lot of mass production and homemade stuff, and it's just, it kind of got forgotten. It wasn't privy to a lot of the technological advances that were happening, and especially in the 80s and 90s, it really became sort of a factory. It pumped out a lot of mass-produced wine, which is nice, but not really good and interesting. Nothing worth importing into the United States, and so there really wasn't much available to people. The company that changed all that was a company called Planeta. And if you've been in the store from time to time, we have their Rosso, their Nero d'Avola. They're a very, very well-respected company. But how they got into the U.S. and really into the international scene was importing and creating Moscato of a certain quality. And the Moscato from Sicily was all of a sudden recognized very well. And so that's how they started to get on the scene, is for this really nice, sweet quality wine. And then people started coming and checking out what was going on the Sicilian scene, and they discovered a lot of different things. What did they discover? Well, the first, the real workhorse and the thing that we all love here, like I just mentioned, is Nero d'Avola. Nero d'Avola is a wonderful red grape that was almost exclusively used, essentially under the cover of darkness, to fortify weak reds from France and Italy. They would just send it on. It was a very rich, dense red wine, and they would just send it on and just kind of, you know, put it in the stuff, like I said, under the cover of darkness. It was often very, you know, syrupy and very, very high alcohol because it just got super ripe. But now what people are doing is they're planting it at slightly higher altitudes, harvesting at night, so not letting it get the super ripe. And you're getting actually really, really nice wines, kind of comparable to Syrah, juicy red fruit, a little spice, really, really nice wines. So Nero d'Avola, check it out if you're a fan of, you know, Zinfandels and blends and things like that, that give you a little bit of, you know, juicy fruit and spice. Really, really killer stuff. And as I said, Planeta is very good. There's a number of really good. Colossi makes a really, really nice Nero d'Avola. So check those out. Another grape that is blended with Nero d'Avola, and actually we're getting a really, really good one in on Friday of this week, is called Frappato. Frappato is kind of like, it's kind of like Gamay from Beaujolais. It's like light and fun, almost candied as well. And then they blend that with Nero d'Avola and create this wine called Cerasuolo di Vittoria, which is absolutely phenomenal. And so I encourage you all to check that out. That will be coming in, like I said, this Friday. The other grape that is being grown on Etna, which is really worth noting if you're a Pinot Noir lover, is Nerello. It's tough to sort of, you know, say into a Nerello Mascalese. So again, they're growing this on the volcanic slopes of Mount Etna, and it makes this perfumed red wine that I'm telling you rivals wines from Burgundy. It's just absolutely beautiful. So check those out. Frank Cornelissen, who is a Belgian, makes some really, really spellbinding ones that we occasionally are lucky enough to have. Now, the wine we're having today, as I mentioned, is a white wine. This is made out of the grape Grillo, G-R-I-L-L-O, Grillo. And this is the grape that they use to make into the Marsala wine, and they fortify it. But this is just a regular, old, vinified version of Grillo that is substantial. It is interesting. If you like, I don't know, Sauvignon Blancs, I think you'll probably like this. If you like just... I don't know. It's unlike anything else, which is kind of why I dig it. It's kind of like a blend of like Pinot Blanc and Sauvignon Blanc and Pinot Gris all together. It's really magnificent and very affordable and very accessible. This is 10 plus year old vines. This is from it's made for a group. I'm sorry, not a group, but a winery called Occhi Pinti. But this is Tami, T-A-M-I, Grillo. And Occhi Pinti is the ones that make the wine that I was talking about that is coming in on Friday. So these guys are killer, always in the New York Times, blah, 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 blah. Anyway, this is their very Grillo. Good. Fabulous stuff. Really quick, September 21st is our California wine tasting. The 29th is our Bubba's Angels Women, Wine, and Kittens event. Come on out for both of them, both from 5 to 7. It'll be a lot of fun. They're both on Facebook. Check those out. And thank you all.
See you soon. Thanks, Eric. Eric Mann, Bangor Wine and Cheese Company. Message in the bottle every single Tuesday. If you missed a segment or if you just want to hear it again, we understand how you feel. You go to our website, downtownwithrichkimble.com. Click on the Message in the Bottle link.